From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Wildfire is the one-word headline for California as another week begins after what's been a deadly and destructive weekend. Thousands of firefighters are trying at this moment to save lives and property in 19 major battles across the state, including the Carr Fire by Redding, the Mendocino Complex Fire up north, the Steel Fire in Napa County, the Ferguson Fire in Mariposa County. Tens of thousands of people are still evacuated. Lives, homes, and property, as I'm sure you know, have been lost, and some people are still missing. But containment is increasing in each of these fights. At 9:30, we're going to get a live update from CAL FIRE. We're going to begin, though, with guests in the studio that I know quite well, two of my CAP Radio colleagues. They were in Redding over the weekend. Insight producer Bert Johnson is here. Hi, Bert.
Good morning.
Glad to have you step from the control room into the studio.
Glad to be here.
And Andrew Nixon is here as well, multimedia producer who took off last Friday with his camera and headed to the fire area. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Beth. Good to be here.
So, Bert, tell me where you were and what you saw on Saturday.
So I began my day reporting at the fire camp, which is actually at the fairgrounds in Anderson. So it's a little bit south of Redding. And I got a briefing from one of the CAL FIRE PIOs. And then I made my way into Redding itself, and I was trying to get into some of the neighborhoods that had been burned during the first couple days of the fire. It was sort of challenging to get access. They had a lot of checkpoints on all of the roads, and just to give you a sense of the geography, the western side of the city was affected by these fires.
Right.
When I was there on Saturday, fire crews had been working really hard all night long through really tough conditions, but they had managed to push the fire out of the city and back into the hills. And at this point, the fire itself is sort of moving westward away from the city proper. So when I got there, it was sort of difficult to get through the checkpoints, but I ended up getting into a neighborhood called Lake Redding Estates, which is a subdivision right along Lake Redding, which is connected to the Sacramento River there in town. And that had been under mandatory evacuation. By the time I got there, crews were just doing mop-up operations in the neighborhood.
I heard reports over the weekend of people getting back in to see whether their home was still standing or not. Were there people around, other just citizens who had somehow managed to get into the neighborhood?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the first person I talked to in the neighborhood was a guy named Ken Hill, who basically waited out the fire at his house. He was one of the very few people in the neighborhood to do that. And I've got a little tape from an interview I recorded with him.
I almost left. We got that close. I didn't have to. I got lucky. I didn't have to leave. Mm-hmm. Probably should have, but didn't. I felt pretty safe. If I wouldn't have felt safe, I would have left. We stayed on the roofs, watched it come in. As you get about three blocks down, you're going to see total devastation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, homes burnt to the ground.
It is a frightening decision to stay. It's one that CAL FIRE urges against. And in fact, I think the sixth death in the Carr Fire this weekend happened to a person whose identity hasn't been released yet, but again, did not leave during a time of either suggested or mandatory evacuation. Tell me what else you saw.
In addition to Ken's house, there were a few other homes in the neighborhood where I was that looked untouched. And his was untouched the entire night he was there. He was hosing down his roof, just trying to protect his property. So the interesting thing about the way that this fire was burning through neighborhoods is it got so big that it's been creating its own weather and its own wind.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what that does is blow embers ahead of the main fire. And if an ember lands on a house that, for instance, has leaves in the gutter or some other kind of fuel on the house or around the house, it can ignite that one house but leave the houses on either side untouched for the time being. And I spoke to City of Redding firefighters who were saying when they encounter a situation like that, they have to make the very difficult choice to prioritize the houses on either side. So you see a lot of single homes that have been completely burned to the ground, and then houses on either side will be either mostly intact or sometimes totally intact. So it can be very difficult to predict what's going to burn.
That's just as devastating an experience. And I think you witnessed this too, Andrew, which is coming back into a neighborhood. If yours is the home that's standing, you're relieved, and yet you know all your neighbors. You know what happened in your community, and so many others around you would have lost everything.
Yeah, and just a little anecdote. I took a break from the coverage to go get a sandwich in town, and I met a couple at the deli who they had evacuated and had no idea because their home was right at the edge of where the burn happened. They didn't know, and they saw my press badge and my cameras, and they came up to me and they asked, "Can you get past the police barriers with that press badge?" I said, "Yeah, they have to let you pass." And they gave me an address and said, "Could you please check whether or not our home was destroyed?" I said, "Do you want to know? Do you really want to know?" And they said, "Yes." Yeah. So I thought to myself, "Well, if they're near the burn area, that's a place I'd like to go anyway." And I checked on their home, and luckily for them, their home and their neighbors were all spared from the fire, but the fire had kind of gone around the street they were on. Mm-hmm. So so I texted them a photo of the house, and I said, "Okay, your house is still standing." But but yeah, it's got to be devastating. And I've seen I was in a similar part of the city that Bert was on Friday, and they were just putting out just the ashes that were left of these people's homes. And but then maybe a block down or two blocks down, it was fine. And the fire tornado weather that was produced by the fire was had knocked down a street lamp and a large tree, blown out windows and houses. It was very, that as well was also very selective, like, mm-hmm. Where things had happened. So,
well, if you saw that video, there's no doubt that it was a fire tornado that was blowing through there. There's been a lot of talk, Bert, about how firefighters couldn't even really defend property or fight the fires at homes. They really needed to just get people out of there.
Yeah, that's right. One of the other things that I heard from CAL FIRE officials is that wildfires behave very differently now than they traditionally have in California. So, you know, they're calling this the new normal, but you're seeing this really explosive growth of fires like that we saw in, like, for instance, in the Tubbs Fire in Santa Rosa, and
right.
then the same thing in Redding. Mm-hmm. I actually heard some folks saying that the conditions in the Carr Fire are worse than they were in Santa Rosa. But yeah, it's very difficult for them to predict how the fire will behave.
Who else did you talk to?
So I also heard from a resident in the same neighborhood, the Lake Redding area, who's actually currently experiencing homelessness. He's a veteran named Paul Subia. And he said that he had sort of weathered the fire on the outside. So I've got a clip from him we can listen to.
They were shutting the buses down for certain routes or changing routes, and people were sitting outside in the ash and the soot waiting for buses, and we never found out nothing till we actually walked to the bus authority and found out from them that they had switched things up. News didn't even cover it.
Yeah, I think that was tough. Things happened so quickly that getting information was a challenge. I think you had another conversation with someone named Graham Matthews who was speaking to that same point.
Exactly. And I met Graham Matthews and his daughter as they were actually walking into this neighborhood, and they were trying to see whether or not their house was okay. And luckily for them, it turned out it was.
We finally had to find out whether our house was there or not. We were sort of assuming it was gone because based on the fire maps. And, you know, then we're thinking, well, what do we do? You know, school starts in a few weeks. We got to have a place to live. You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of people looking for rentals and looking to buy or do whatever. So we just needed to know whether it was still there or not so we could start making some decisions about what we were going to do.
It's a split experience right now. The battle to save neighborhoods and lives is still going on, and yet a lot of people have to look forward and figure out, what do I do if my house is gone? I have to send my children back to school. I have to recreate my life. And Andrew, did you see some of that coming together that always happens in a community? I mean, by going up and just finding out the status of someone's home, you were part of that network of information. But what else happened in that kind of spirit of what happens post-disaster?
Well, on Friday, the neighborhood I went into, a lot of people snuck in either through back roads or simply walking past police barriers, because most of the time, I think the police are looking for cars. Like, people stop, you know, they're trying to stop a car. But if someone can walk up a side street or what have you, they'll get in. And there were a lot of people on phone saying, you know, so-and-so, I see your house, or, you know, there was a group of neighbors that were trying to rescue pets out of burned out homes. So I don't know how that works, but I guess cats and dogs, some of the cats and dogs that I saw had left, somehow survived the burn area, and then had come back to the smoldering homes to be rescued by their owners or their owners' neighbors. Mm. Yeah, you definitely saw a coming together of neighbors in that sense, of trying to help each other out with pets, as well as at the blockade. I heard people saying, "Oh, come stay with me."
Right.
So people were forming these networks of places to sleep, you know, rather than go to a shelter, which, you know, it would probably be more ideal to stay in your neighbor's home or your friend's home than a shelter.
And, you know, just from what I saw, too, I actually went to Shasta College, where the American Red Cross had set up what was at that point, anyway, the largest evacuation center in the area. And I spoke to a local named Brett Larson. He's a young man who's been living in Redding for 30 years, and he was volunteering that day.
I am a walk-on volunteer. I was actually displaced from the Mary Lake subdivision near, I guess not the beginning of the fire, about 4 days in, I think. And I'm not sure if I have a house at this point. I am safe, though. I have the ability to bed with my uncle, and I've just kind of, I don't have anything else to do, so I'm here.
I don't know if you've been to a fire scene before, Bert, but in anything that you have witnessed before, how did this compare?
So this was the first fire that I've covered. I think in terms of the sort of energy, and I would say the prominent thing that stood out to me is people just don't know for sure if their houses are okay. Some folks have lost touch with friends and relatives, and that's very scary for them. And that kind of energy reminds me of the coverage I did of a lot of those really hectic protests in Berkeley last year, where you had, you know, downtown Berkeley is normally a fairly chill place, and you had these huge congregations of people, some of whom were there to fight each other. So talking to folks who were from Berkeley, I got not the same sense, of course, but a similar sense of unease and not knowing what to expect.
Well, some of that is going to continue, and I'll let people know that we have continuing coverage at capradio.org. I appreciate your work over the weekend, and of course, we extend so much thought and prayer to everybody on the front lines and people trying to make sure that their lives are intact. To what you said, there are 7 people at least still reported missing in Redding. So when we get any updated information, we'll let you know as well. Thank you, Bert.
Thank you.
That is Bert Johnson, Insight producer. And Andrew, you're posting photos from your experience there Friday.
Yeah, I posted one to Instagram, but most of my photos are on Twitter at @CPR_Andrew.
Okay, and thank you too. Appreciate your work over there and continuing coverage again at capradio.org. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you, Beth.
You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. Mm-hmm.